We're going to talk about the Oberlin Project.
That's right.
Find out what that's all about with us. Sean Hayes, Executive Director. Good morning. Good
morning, gentlemen.
The Oberlin Project. Who's behind it? Who's involved with that? There's many parts to this, right?
There are a lot of parts to it, yes. Formally, the way that we say it is the Oberlin Project is a joint partnership between the City of Oberlin, Oberlin College, and private and institutional partners to improve the resilience, sustainability, and prosperity of the community. So there's your vague definition, right?
Right.
So the Oberlin Project, the way that takes form, right, is we're trying to create the city of the future. You know, what does that look like? And it takes a number of forms. So the way that we're, you know, if I try to break it down simply, it's a city that makes its own energy and treats its own waste and grows its own food and builds its own sustainable economy moving forward. So that's the short of it. And those are kind of the target areas that we think that we can leverage, building on the strengths of this community, you know, which has a proud history.
How did you get involved in that effort?
Well, I got involved in the project. I was formerly running the Adam Joseph Lewis Center at the college, which is one of the first examples of the modern green building movement. I'm an energy geek, so I got involved by working in renewable energy and sustainable building design, which are one of the key tenets of the project. But in that capacity, I was working with the project on some of its committees. There was a turnover at the executive leadership level, and I think that the city and the college wanted somebody who wasn't a transplant from outside of Oberlin at that point. I moved into the role.
Are these glowing orbs part of the Oberlin Project?
Everything. Yeah.
We talked last spring where they had the competition.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, like Energy Olympics or something.
Yeah, yeah, Eco-Olympics.
Eco-Olympics, yeah. Or whatever. And you can see that sort of there's a cause and effect or a way to kind of see results. I guess that's the key to a lot of this is, what am I doing? What is it? What's the benefit? You know, they talk about replacing a light bulb, and maybe 60 years you'll be paying it back in such a sense. What do you see, or what are the things that you can do to mark time with the Oberlin Project?
Yeah, yeah. So the Oberlin Project takes many, many forms, and the orbs are something that's been going on at Oberlin College in the Environmental Studies program for a number of years. But they are very much a part of the Oberlin Project as well. There are always multiple sides to any problem, and we generally, I would say, as a technologist, I would say that we focused in the past a lot on engineering solutions, right? It's a lot easier for me to get you to switch from driving a large car to a Prius, but then there's also the behavioral side. What happens if I could get you, to switch from driving a car at all and ride a bike in, like I do? Those orbs are a way of providing feedback on energy consumption, resource consumption in real time, which we've been disconnected from pretty much since the point we stopped heating with wood primarily, right? The analogy there is, if you're heating your house with wood, you know when you're using more resources because you're going out and splitting it, you're bringing it in, you're loading the fire, you're hauling out the ashes. Now, everything is quiet. It's behind closed doors. You get a bill at the end of the month, and you say, "Wow, I used a lot this month," or "Wow, Jesus, our toilet running." Those orbs are a real-time feedback mechanism that aims to inform educated building occupants who might be inclined to make a change. So they glow a different color when you're using more energy or when you're using more water than normal. And when you're using less, they glow a different color. So it's that real-time feedback that's been missing, and we're trying to educate a more informed building occupant.
Almost the way my phone tells me you're using your minutes or you have too much data, and so you think, okay, I'm slowing down, instead of after the fact. It gives you a chance maybe to participate in kind of having some control on it.
Exactly.
What are some of the other things that are taking place? You talked about building the community or city of the future. You use that term. Yet you're dealing with so much old.
Mm-hmm.
Oberlin College, century. You're talking about how do you, as opposed to starting with fresh and building it the way the future should be, how do you take something that's currently there and slowly mold it to fit what you're looking at?
It's a great question. I mean, the reality is that's both the strength and the challenge of doing this in Oberlin. Oberlin has a proud history of being on, I would argue, the right side of the social issues of the day. And I think at some level, we've recognized that parts of the Oberlin Project, you know, the climate piece, right? We're trying to transition to a post-carbon economy. That's going to disproportionately affect people of different socioeconomic status. If I'm wealthy, I will be less affected. I'll be able to kind of buy my way out of that to some degree. But there are people who are going to be on the other end of that spectrum. And so we're trying to bring the whole community, you know, forward with that. So that's the kind of carbon side of it. But you know, in building that city of the future, right? That's a strength that we can rely on within Oberlin. There's a cultural piece that people here understand and believe in, and so we can leverage that strength as opposed to just, you know, doing the we've had a tornado level our town, and so we can actually build it, at a high quality. So it's a challenge and an opportunity. Really, to try to do this in an existing town. We've had great success. We have a local municipal light and power company, for example. Right now, all the equipment in here that's plugged in, even though this building is an old building, you're running on 71% carbon neutral power right now. By the end of next year, it'll be upper 80%. That's a big change, and that's something that we should be celebrating. Now the challenge is to get at the consumption side, which I would normally do first. Normally, I would say, well, you reduce your energy consumption. That's the low cost. That's the low-hanging fruit. And that means you have to provide less of it via a renewable source. We now have the challenge of trying to find a way to equitably rebuild, you know, an old housing stock in town that's pretty inefficient. We have the advantage, though, of you know, having clean sources of power for it.
I was at the groundbreaking for the new Peter B. Lewis Conference Center going up, and David Orr was there representing the Oberlin Project at the time, and much was said about how that's going to be incorporated in this new structure. Can you tell us a little bit more about that and how it's going to help?
Yeah, the Peter B. Lewis Gateway Center is a major, if you look at it from an economic development standpoint, it's a major investment right in the heart of downtown Oberlin. It is at the main intersection in town. What it is it's a commitment. I mentioned that the Oberlin Project is you know, this kind of formal collaboration between partner institutions. The Oberlin Project, the story of it really helped to catalyze that building, to make it happen. You know, we could have, you know, the college could have, you know, rebuilt the Oberlin Inn, you know, to some lower standard, but by pairing it with the Oberlin Project, the story became much greater. You know, we're greater than the sum of our parts. And so as a result, that hotel, if all goes to plan, I have no reason to believe that it wouldn't, then it will revolutionize some of the things that we look at as far as energy systems in a hotel. Right now, last I heard, we're looking at an HVAC system in that hotel that eliminates man-made refrigerants. That's a remarkable thing on the engineering side, and it'll have a lot of attention from countless organizations outside of Oberlin. So that's one of the many ways in which it hopes to be groundbreaking. But it's the cornerstone of you know, what we've been calling the Green Arts District, which is a college-owned block downtown. But looking at revitalizing downtown, the college said, you know, that it had the property and it had the funds to take the first step in revitalizing downtown, and that project is drawing a lot of interest. You see something happening, and people respond. We respond to a model. You know, we respond to seeing something in real life. Talking about it, you know, here is nice, and it'll get us part of the way. But when you see something tangible, that's what makes the difference. And so that hotel, that conference center, it'll be mixed use retail space. Is one of the first steps in really trying to rebuild this downtown. And you know, that's taken off. You know, we also have a residential building project that's a very lovely family, single mother and her daughters are going to be moving into. That's going to be a high performance, I believe, solar powered home. for a price point that's equal to, you know, standard kind of stick frame construction. Those models are what we're trying to build so that we can leverage the strengths and get the community involved.
You talked about sort of the change in where people see with, especially with the Oberlin Inn. When they went through and cut things down and a lot of the greenery kind of disappeared, there was kind of like a gasp that kind of occurred in a sense. But I know that your importance, green space is important, and sort of that agricultural part of it is another aspect of this mm-hmm. project too, right? About trying to get food sources locally and trying to maintain everything within a certain distance, I guess?
Yeah, yeah. One of the many lofty goals of the Oberlin Project is developing a robust local food system. We're blessed at some level being located, you know, kind of in a rural part of the country. There are a lot of food producers right outside our door. With that said, when you look at the industrial food system, right now, geez, the stat I saw, National Geographic's been running a special on this, and the stat I saw when I'm flipping through that this morning was when you consider all the supply chain, the average piece of food on your plate has traveled over 5,000 miles. That's ludicrous to somebody who grew up in an agricultural community. Why is that? I mean, the reality is when you look at, you know, at economies, it's because it's cheaper for us. Now, that's kind of mind-boggling to me. But it makes a lot of sense when you look at the value to farmers, when you look at the value to consumers. Building that robust local food economy means that more of those dollars spent at, you know, at the consumer level get in the farmer's pocket. You're cutting out the middlemen in the supply chain. And, you know, no offense to the middlemen out there, but I think I'd rather my dollars go to the person growing my food. So finding a way to localize that supply chain builds a robust economy, it keeps more dollars local, it helps to build that prosperity. And by recreating, rethinking the supply chain at the local level, you create economic opportunity for residents. So it's one of those win-win-win situations, you know, healthier, tastier, local food, prosperity for the farmers in the area, and developing those economic opportunities for people along the supply chain.
If people want to find out more about the Oberlin Project, got ideas for it, maybe want to get involved, obviously volunteer is a big probably a part of this too. Where's a good place for them to check that out?
We have a website, oberlinproject.org. There's a good bit of information there, and most importantly, there's how to contact us, who we are, how to contact us. The Oberlin Project is staffed by 4 people, including me. So when you think about all the goals we're talking about and 4 people, we are busy. And in finding ways to engage and involve the local community is one of the most important transformative pieces of the project. So that's where to go to find out some more about us. You know, the other ways to get involved with the Oberlin Project, frankly, are being an involved citizen, you know, going to meetings, participating in you know, the process, the policies that we do at the local level impact, the future.
And maybe just practice some of those energy conservation tips that we sort of all know, but at some points we think, I'll leave my charger plugged in, or I'm coming back to this room. I'll leave that light on, or
absolutely
start the water running. That type
we have
of
some
thing.
Great partners in town, including a local nonprofit called Power, which is offering free energy audits to anyone in town, and then they'll partner you up with a more in-depth audit that will tell you how to save energy in your house, and then also subsidize some of the cost of those repairs. That's a great way to be involved.
Sure. Anything that involves your wallet, we're always listening to that. Sean Hayes, Executive Director, Oberlin Project, thanks for coming in, sharing all the great details with us.